This is an AMI podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Double Tap. It is Wednesday, it's the 20th of March 2024. Coming up, all the news from CSUN as it all gets underway in Anaheim, California.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you doing today? Happy CSUN Day.
Happy CSUN Day to you, sir. I am so excited. Well, there's a lot of sussies in there. News and announcements. Oh, what a wonderful week.
I've never heard you sound so happy in your life.
I am. Well, we've already had some breaking news already, and it's just started.
It is just beginning.
Breaking news.
So we'll get to that in a second. Just want to say as well, coming up a little bit later, Alison Sheridan is joining us. She is going to be at CSUN for the next few days, and she's looking forward to bringing us all the information from there. Now, she's the host of the Nozilla podcast, and she is someone who is sighted. I know.
What?
Sighted. Interested in blind people.
What?
Shocking. I know. But... this is someone who has taken a lot of time to get to know accessibility tools, get to know how accessibility works, and even build it into her own reviews that she does on her podcast. It's a mainstream podcast, but she does make reference to accessibility. I think that's quite unique in the mainstream podcast world, especially around tech, right? Everyone talks about, you know, all the great features of a new piece of hardware, but no one ever delves into whether or not it's accessible or not, and she does, which is amazing. So
yeah,
Alison's joining us a bit later to tell us about that ahead of her trip today. But before that, yeah, there's a lot of news to get through. And of course, we heard from Mike Buckley this week, Be My Eyes, big news about AI, and a similar story actually coming from Ira. Ira announcing new Access AI feature at CSUN. This was announced just late last night. Now, of course, everyone's at Anaheim for this event, which is, of course, a major way of getting the latest news and features out there.
Yes. It's the go-to, you know, event of the year when it comes to accessible tech.
Absolutely. And it also gives people a chance to try things as well, because this particular feature from Ira is coming out as a beta. So not everyone will have access to this right away, but if you're in CSUN, you'll be able to get hands-on with this and get a chance to try it out. It's basically a new image chat feature, an AI chat feature with a unique twist that provides an extra layer of trust. So this is what it says in the blurb around this. Access AI allows IRA users who they refer to as explorers to take a photo, share from photo gallery, mobile device or computer, and get a detailed description, ask follow-up questions, and receive free validation of AI responses from a visual interpreter. So what does that mean in reality? You take a picture, you use AI to examine what is in that image. Maybe it's not giving you the answer you want. You can then ask an interpreter, an agent, or an agent as we would call them, to verify what the information that you're looking for, because they can then see the image. So I think that's quite interesting. So it's a new AI enhancement to the existing Ira app. It'll be built right in, and explorers can instantly connect with a professional visual interpreter on a video call to assist with various tasks, which is what you can do with Ira. Access AI is free to use and complements the free access explorers have to visual interpreters, including daily 5-minute free calls or unlimited access offers by partners that includes Target, Starbucks, Jaws, Intuit Small Business, Job Seeker, and more. So, yeah, this is interesting. And apparently it was designed with input from more than 30 Ira explorers through the Ira AI Advisory Group, who continue to provide input on Ira's use of AI. So, very similar. I mean, there's no way you can get around the fact this is very similar to Be My AI.
Can we talk about the Be My Elephant in the Room? yeah, no, of course it is. But again, more choice. You know, I'm happy that this feature has been added to Ira, and hopefully it'll be helpful. I really want to try this out.
I have questions, and we are going to be speaking to Ira. Troy Ottilio is going to be joining us, the CEO. He's going to be joining us in the coming days. to tell us more about this feature. I guess my first question to Troy is going to be, and if you guys have questions as well, do let me know about those questions and we'll ask them to Troy. But I am intrigued to know about the data here, because one of the issues with Be My AI is that the information you're uploading, the image you're uploading, is essentially going out to OpenAI. And there's a little bit of ambiguity, I think it's fair to say, as to what actually happens with that image. Is it stored? Is it kept? Is it destroyed? Is it anonymized? What happens to that data? And for that reason, the team at Be My Eyes have been very clear on this. Don't upload a bank statement. You know, don't take pictures of personal information. You know, try and keep whatever you're needing to know as non-personal as possible. And they've been at pains to say that.
Yes.
Now, interestingly, with Aira, one of the reasons you might pay for Aira as a service, as opposed to use Be My Eyes, which many people will use as well as using Aira, because Be My Eyes, it's volunteers. With Aira, it's paid agents, and you pay a monthly fee to access those agents. It does come with an extra layer of, I guess trust is true, but I think privacy as well. So, you know, when you're with an Aira agent and you do need to read a bank statement, you know that that is a secure place to be, right? You're not talking to a volunteer, and God love the volunteers, but you don't know who you're connecting with. And Be My Eyes are always at pains to say, just don't share personal information.
Yeah.
Whereas with an Aira agent, you would expect that. Now, with that in mind, with this new feature coming out, you would imagine that it would be the same. Also, if I upload an image, only the agent will see it. But if it's using AI, where is it getting the information from? And is it still as secure and safe? Now, I can say this because at the moment, this is going to be a limited beta. There's a wait list, which you can, we'll put a link on our show notes, and we'll also put a link on the website as well, so you can find the form to fill out if you want to become a beta tester on this. But I do think there's questions around the data set. Where is what's the large language model it's using? Where is it getting the information from? And what does that mean for privacy? Now, these are questions I hope Troy can answer when he comes on with us this week.
Yeah. Okay, we will find an answer. We will see.
So, yeah, let's see what comes of that. But very interesting. I mean, again, it's just about choice, isn't it? That's the key. It's all about choice. And great to hear Aira announcing this new Access AI feature. Are you excited about this, or are we just getting a little bit of AI fatigue?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the kind of, it doesn't have the impact as perhaps it might once have done.
That's exactly
it's not
the
their
point.
Fault. It's nothing to do with Aira.
No. Exactly right. It's just, okay, it's another one of these services. But I mean, as I said, it's great to see it integrated into Aira, which I still use, by the way. So it's great to see that functionality there. So we will have to wait and see. I think you're right, though. It's a bit like, this is great news, but it just seems a little bit late to the game. But that doesn't mean it's not welcomed.
No, definitely not. And say late to the game, I mean, what are we talking, a year since this stuff came out? I mean, it's actually, in our world, this is pretty fast. The implementation is pretty quick. It's just because we've had such
there's more places to get the same sort of thing. Seeing AI supports it. Be My Eyes, obviously, were the first to come out with it, and lots of other Copilot. I think you can do the same thing in. It's just not fairly unique anymore. Again, not to say it's not welcomed,
but it is about the implementation, right? It is about making it easy. You've said yourself, Copilot, the experience of using it. I would probably not use Copilot for this kind of thing. I'd go to Be My AI. I would definitely now be trying Aira. Access AI.
Yeah, because it does make a difference how they...
Because it's built for us.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
So, yes, more to talk about on that. And if you do have questions for Troy or any of the team at Aira, and it doesn't have to be on this topic, we're always happy to throw a curveball to them, to any company, quite frankly. So if you do have a question about Aira, I know some people have been wondering, it's felt as if they've been a little bit quiet in the past few months. Then do send in your emails, feedback@doubletaponair.com. Send in your question and we will definitely put it to Troy. We're talking to them Thursday afternoon, so we'll not be airing the interview until Friday. But if you do have a question, then send it in right away and we will include it. Now, another story which came out of CSUN already, and again, it's been moving pretty fast, even at this early stage, Orbit Research. Now, I was hoping for a press release that said, the Orbit Speak is now available. Buy it now. Get your Orbit Speaks here.
Yes. Yes, where are you? Where in the world is the Orbit Speak? Okay, but this isn't
well, that. It's not that, no, because they've announced two new devices, the Orbit Reader Q40 and the Orbit Reader Q20. Now, I'll say that again. They've introduced two new devices, the Orbit Reader Q40, that's very familiar, yes, and the Orbit Reader Q20.
What does the Q stand for, Stephen Scott?
Well, you'd be surprised to learn it's for QWERTY.
Wow, so we're talking QWERTY keys instead of the Perkins Braille input.
We are talking, based on cited people who I trust to give me the information here, almost exactly the same design as the Mantis Q40.
Oh.
I say almost because some of the ports are in different places and things like that, but the keyboard is the same. It's that laptop-style keyboard. It doesn't have the numpad. Missed opportunity here, I really think. But I do think that's actually a missed opportunity. There's something about the desire to create something that is really, really small, and I get why. You want it to be portable, but you know, we've seen, what do they call them, 10 keyless, the TKL keyboards, where basically they take away the cursor keys, or they at least make them very small, almost laptop style.
Yes.
But then they have the additional number pad. They could do that with this. But okay,
particularly on
fine,
the Q40, right?
Let's not destroy it before we tell people what it is. And I'm talking to myself here. But basically, you're looking at a very similar device to the Mantis Q40. There's no way around that because it is. It's the same style, same design. It is the laptop keyboard. The keys are in almost exactly the same layout. It doesn't have an insert key, which if it had, I think I'd be selling my Mantis tomorrow. Because you know me and my insert keys. I love an insert key.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, I care.
Yeah,
nobody and clearly cares. Nobody else does.
Nope.
It comes with a 40-cell display, hence Q40. So again, similar with its cursor routing keys and the thumb keys and all of that. But it also comes as another variant, Q20. So same design, same size, but with 20 cells. And that allows them to sell that at a cheaper cost. Thoughts on that? Is that a smart move?
Of course it's a smart move.
I feel it is, but I'm like, is it? I don't know. 20 cells has never felt enough to me. But then I suppose a lot of people do buy, I mean, the Orbit Reader 20, the BI 20. You know, these are all 20 cell, and they seem to. Yeah,
I'm not experienced enough.
Cost ultimately.
I'm not experienced enough in using Braille every day to know if 20 is enough or 40 is preferable, depending on the use case. I honestly don't know. I'm not experienced enough, but
I think grade 2 users would say that a 20 cell would be enough because you know you can get a lot more than 20 cells, and you can. Yeah. 20 yeah. grade 1. So,
of course,
yeah, maybe that's it.
This is Orbit. So what I'm wondering is price. What's the price here? A 20 cell, maybe just the entry level because of price more than anything
else. Well, I'm going to do what the shopping channel's doing. Let me tell you about all the stats first and they'll tell you the price at the end. You know, I'll just keep you waiting.
Okay.
Here we're talking, as they say themselves on their website, QWERTY and Braille on one device, which we've seen already with the, and not uniquely with the Mantis, other devices, the Braille Note Apex, QT back in the day. That's the one that always springs to mind when I think about this kind of device. It's kind of the one I hoped would return, which is what happened when the Mantis came along. Now we have this as well. QWERTY keyboard, it's got its unique signage quality Braille cells. That is different. Some like it. Some find it a little bit too hard to read, but for those who do have issues with sensitivity to read Braille, I think this is where Orbit have kind of nailed the market, actually. They've got this right. And you can, to some degree, although I need to investigate this a little bit more, but you can change the firmness of the Braille on certain Braille displays. Not sure if that's across the board. I know, for example, on my Focus 40, I was able to improve. I felt it was just very spongy, the Braille. You know, as you put your fingers on it, it would kind of just push the dots in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas you can firm that up a little bit on the device. I did it on the Mac and it worked pretty well. Haven't needed to do it on the Mantis, to be honest. I felt the Braille was actually really nice on the Mantis as it is, so I haven't done anything with it. Orbit, I don't know if you can soften it a little bit. I don't know. I'd be interested
to know
if that's
the thing. The functionality is called 2D Braille, I believe, isn't it? On the Mac, at least.
On the
I've
Mac,
seen
it is,
it.
Yeah.
So, we don't know if that's specific to certain Braille displays, maybe the type of Braille cell that supports that, or it's universal. I honestly don't know.
48-dot Braille, refreshable Braille display cells on there. Also, the full-size high-quality... Is this full-size high-quality QWERTY keyboard? It's not full-size, of course, because it's laptop style. Arrow keys in an inverted T configuration, 12 function keys. On top of that, you've got the cursor routing buttons. You've got the configurable thumb keys for easy navigation. You can use it standalone. You can connect it to a computer or mobile device. It's got a book reader mode as well. You can read books and files from an SD card or a USB flash drive. It's got a note taker mode, so you can take notes and edit files independently of whatever device you're connected to. The Braille display mode can connect to 6 computers and mobile devices over USB and Bluetooth. So 5 over Bluetooth, I would guess, 1 via USB. It works with all the operating systems you can think of, although I guess its mileage may vary on Android at the moment with that whole Bluetooth HID issue.
There's ways.
But if you connect via USB, I think you'd be fine.
Yeah.
Onboard forward and backward translation as well, which is good. Onboard apps, clock and alarm, calendar, calculator. Here's something interesting. Audio and haptic output. Now, that stopped me in my tracks.
What does that
because
mean?
Because audio. Because this is one thing the Mantis doesn't have, is audio. Now, when don't know how you look at it, right? It does have audio. If you press the wrong key, for example, when you're in the HumanWare's own software, it will go, eh. So that's audio, I guess.
You joke about it, but that could be exactly what Orbit are talking about there. It buzzes and beeps at you if there's an error or a problem. But of course, I'm immediately thinking, does this support audiobooks, podcasts, internet radio, even a screen reader? I doubt it very much. I'm taking too much. And this would be...
Not on board. I think that gets into the realms of a whole other computer. It becomes a note. Well, would you call that a note taker? I always get mixed up with what we should call these because there's that whole debate around Braille note taker versus Braille display, which are very different. They have more functionality in them than a Braille note taker.
Of course, if it's got
kind of a hybrid.
If it's got a calendar, a clock, and book reading capabilities, I would say it's a note taker.
It's hybrid, isn't it? It's a hybrid between the two. Because most of the content you're going to consume is going to be through a different device. It's going to be through a connected device, like a phone or a whatever else, and the audio is going to come from that device, which I think is fine. I'm cool with that. Haptic output, I mean, again, the same on the Mantis. You get haptic feedback when you turn the device on, when you turn it off for certain notifications. You can have haptic feedback as well. Yeah. Panning rocker keys as well at the end of each display. That is pretty cool. I don't think we certainly don't have that on the Mantis, but you've got rocker keys on this. On the Orbit Research version, a USB-A host port for connecting flash drives and other peripherals, which up until this morning, I had no idea the Mantis actually had. I don't know what I was... Because the thing is, I've got this silicon case that I sit the Mantis in, right? So it kind of sits inside this. But there's not a hole cut out for that port, which is kind of funny. I didn't even know it was there until I actually took it out. I was like, let's just check this. Oh, it does have one. USB-C port for charging and connectivity, which is good.
Nice. Yeah.
And the fast charging long life battery as well. So that's what you get. And that's the same across the 20 and the 40 range. There is a difference in price though, because you're talking 20 cells versus 40. The Q40. Okay, so I'm going to play a little game with you here, Sean. So the price currently in the US, and we're going with US pricing because that's what we have here. If I look at the Mantis Q40 from HumanWare Direct, we're talking $2,695 American, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So how much will the Orbit Reader Q40 with similar functionality, let's just say similar functionality,
wow.
What's Orbit's price? We always know they try and undercut, so what is the price going to be?
So let's say $2,700 for the Mantis Q40 US. I would say, they're going to try and half it, surely. I would say $1,400.
Oh, I kind of wish they had. No, we're talking 18.95 to be exact. $1,895.
Okay, $1,900.
US dollars is the price. So for the Orbit Reader Q20, we're almost halving that, which kind of makes sense because we're halving the number of sales, I guess. $995 is the price of the Orbit Reader Q20.
Under $1,000. Now, that's an interesting price point to hit.
First time I've ever seen a device like this below $1,000. Which is maybe the biggest headline of all of it, with the 20 cells. But I think, okay, look, can I get real for a second? I've got to say this because
yes.
as much as I'm excited, and I am, I think this is great. And you know, we'll get into whether or not I'll be selling my Mantis anytime soon in a minute. But I do have a bigger question to ask, which is, when will this actually show up for sale? Now, according to their own literature, June 24, so a couple of months away. But we've heard this before from Orbit. I'm still waiting. As I said at the top, I'm still waiting for my Orbit Speak, which was announced, what, a year and a half ago? Was it not announced at two seasons ago?
I was going to think it was longer than that.
2 years.
Wasn't there an update saying, okay, it's coming soon? Yeah, about a year and a half ago, yeah.
And the Orbit Speak was like the little note taker. It reminds me of the BT Speak that everyone's excited about from Blazy, which has come out. And
it's available, you know,
very small. Yeah, it's got audio output on it. So instead of having a Braille output, it's got audio output, audio feedback, which a lot of people are quite intrigued by. Very much taking people back to the days of the Braille and Speak. It was right back to those days for a lot of people.
Yes.
For some people, I think it's just a walk down memory lane and a reminder of an interesting, you know, or almost beginnings of what became today's note takers and screen readers and all of that.
Yep.
But, you know, certainly a functional device. And the Orbit Speak kind of tied into that, but it hasn't managed to make its way out. It's still very hard as well to get hold of an Orbit reader. If you're looking for a 20 cell or a 20 plus or even the 40, it's very hard to get, you know, get one of those. So it's like, hang on. So you've got issues with supply and demand at the moment for the existing stock, and we've got a product which has been promised for 2 years that hasn't come out. Do I honestly believe this is going to come out in June 24? I don't know. I have doubts, and I have reason to have doubts.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we've got to be fair and balanced here, but to be honest, I think we are. And the confidence level has dipped in the actual viability of these being hitting that release date. And that's no one else's fault but Orbit Research. But hey, I mean, it's great that these products have been launched, in air quotes, but will people actually be able to get their hands on them? That's the big question. We don't want vaporware here. We want these things in our hand. And very exciting.
Launched is good. Launched is good, but actually having the ability to buy the product is another issue.
Yes.
I don't know what the blockage is here, but there seems to be an issue, and I don't know what it is. I'd love to understand what, and I get, of course, you know, through 2020, through 21, and even onwards through 22 and 23, there were a lot of challenges for a lot of companies. And, you know, Orbit are not unique in this problem. There are a lot of companies who are still struggling with supply and demand. And these are specialist devices.
Of course.
So,
yeah, but we understand that. But the point is, then don't say June 2024 if you think that's not
exactly
set in stone. You know, okay, this is going to be a year before we can get over any problems that we may have in manufacture or getting materials. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a shame that sort of it comes into our mind when we think about any products that are now announced when it comes to Orbit, though. It's a shame. It's
but I'll tell you why it annoys me more, because I actually do really respect the work that Orbit does, and I think that they do try to. And I was always impressed by the fact that they had finally managed to get a Braille display within a little bit closer reach to more people.
Yeah,
I think Orbit, you know, without Orbit, we would still be seeing the only options available to us as being 2, 3, 4, 5 thousand. Dollars.
And it did
Orbit
make a difference.
Brought it within reach. Now, I'm not saying it's cheap to buy an Orbit device. It's not. But, you know, we have to also accept that these are devices that are never going to be available. You know, Apple aren't going to make a Braille display and, you know, then sell it to everybody on Earth at a really ridiculous cost. So suddenly it's like, oh, you can have a, you know, 40 cell Braille display for, you know, $100. That's never going to happen.
No.
It's never going to happen. Unless there's a change in the way that these pins are able to be made and able to be produced. I think it's an entire shift is required in the way the technology is created. And maybe down the line with haptic feedback and, you know, tactile capabilities, maybe there's something down the line. It doesn't feel like we're anywhere near that yet, but I wouldn't surprise me down the line if something came along that could do this. I remember a great project years ago called Blitab.
Oh.
And it kind of disappeared off, but it was a product where it was basically, if you imagine, like a Kindle device, like a Kindle book reader, and it had the ability to almost form Braille on its screen. It was a very early prototype idea, but it was quite clever in its design because it didn't use pins. The whole thing was almost the screen kind of just pushed the pins up, you know, but it wasn't pins.
It was air bladders, wasn't it? I think it was almost
electronic.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it was a different way of doing it. And in theory, it was, and I think once they get that, then this is when the cost can start to come down. It's the cost at the moment is in the mechanics of this. But Orbit are doing their best to try and bring this price down, and I really respect them for that. But I don't know if there's a little bit of too much of the walk before they can, or run before they can walk going on here at the moment.
Yeah.
But I just want to see devices coming out. I want to see devices available.
Of course. But I mean, if we just go purely off this, the merits of this announcement, right? This is great news. People are excited by QWERTY input. Going back to our discussions we've had in the past of QWERTY versus Perkins for input, there does seem to be a want, a desire for the QWERTY keyboard. So I'm going to be very interested to see the take-up on this versus something like the standard Orbit Reader 40 or 20 or the Pluses.
And I think Orbit have learned a lot from early quality control issues. They've learned from that. And I think that, you know, certainly from my experience of handling Orbit technology, it is well built. It is solid, good construction. And for that reason, I'd be really into, and that signage quality Braille for a lot of people is just amazing. People love it. So, you know, I can see, and again, just being able to make it affordable or more affordable.
More
yes,
affordable.
I know $1,000, a lot of money, of course it is. But you know what? That's the first time we've ever seen a sub $1,000 device like this. And I think this kind of stuff would fly off the shelves. I really do.
Well,
so that's why
see.
I want them to, you know, get
well, talking
get their
of which, I want to ask you, I want to ask you the question. As someone who's just recently, incredibly recently, bought the Mantis Q40, buyer's remorse?
No, not yet. No. And I'll tell you why, because I go back to my earlier point. I'm not entirely convinced this is going to be available in June 24. I hope it is. I really do. I want to be proved wrong. So Orbit, prove me wrong. But if it's not available soon and people are left waiting for it, then I'm not going to worry too much about the fact that I bought something already. In terms of the feature set, you know, it is very similar, but there are some additions to the Mantis that I like. For example, the HumanWare applications, you know, for example, accessing DAISY online or NFB Newsline.
Yeah.
This device has been out for a little bit as well. It is getting regular updates. There's talk of more updates to come that'll be pretty cool. Some big updates actually coming. We talked with HumanWare recently about this. So, you know, lots of development going on, which is good. I don't regret buying it. I don't regret buying it, but
that's the bottom line.
But I'll be honest, but here's the thing. If the Orbit had been out, I wouldn't have bought it.
Ooh, now that is interesting. I don't know you can say that until you get hands-on with both. Because I have felt that Mantis Q40, and I've got to say, it felt very high quality to me.
Oh, it is.
It felt
it absolutely
very,
is. But
very
look,
nice.
And it maybe comes to price.
Yes, exactly. But maybe people are prepared to pay that little bit extra. No idea about the Orbit Q40 yet, or Q20. Maybe it feels just as nice. But until you get hands-on, you can't really tell if it's worth that extra money or, you know, you're losing anything in paying less.
Yeah. Interesting to see what HumanWare's response
choice.
To this is.
Yes.
Does the price start to fall from HumanWare's end? Always interesting because, you know, if nothing else, it's creating competition. I'm all for that. So there you go. Those are the big announcements so far from CSUN. We'll bring you more as we get them. Up next, we're going to be talking to Alison Sheridan. She is a podcaster and she is heading to CSUN. We'll hear about her story and her podcast and her interest in accessibility from a mainstream perspective. That's next.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Okay, let's talk now to Alison Sheridan. She is heading off to CSUN today, but also she is a podcaster, a mainstream podcaster in her own right, and produces a very interesting show, which does feature a lot of talk about accessibility. And it is great to have you on the show with us, Alison. Tell us about your show.
Well, I do a tech podcast poorly named the NoSillaCast. It's my name spelled backwards, and it's designed so that no one can find me with search engine optimization. And it's a tech podcast with my tagline is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. And I've been doing it for coming up on 19 years in May, My big thing is I've never missed a week, which is pretty amazing. And but it's a generalized tech podcast, mainstream, but I fold accessibility stuff into it just because, like, it's super fun. It's really interesting. And I got interested in accessibility at a very young age, and it just sort of permeated into the show. And I think you said it when we were talking yesterday that now I collect blind friends.
Yes, that's right. You're collecting blind people. And I like that.
When we were talking yesterday, you'd say, oh, do you know Shelley Brisbane? Of course I know Shelley Brisbane.
Yeah, okay,
Michael
you've
Babcock.
Got Shelley.
Of course
good.
I know Michael Babcock.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, you've got Michael, right?
It's like
good.
Marty Sobo. Got to catch us all. We're easy to catch.
That's true. We're very easy to catch. You've got one
Hang
here.
On. Can I just say, I feel we need the applause sound effect here. You haven't missed a week in 19 years.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
That is fantastic.
No, it wasn't always solo. When I go on vacations, I have people like Bart Bouchatz and Alistair Jenks who take over the show. Alistair's in New Zealand and Bart is in Ireland. He's a Belgian from Ireland, which is why I started on that. So people help me, but the show has not missed a week, which is like unheard of.
And how did you get into the world of accessibility?
Well, I didn't start collecting blind people at a young age. That was later. It was my hobby developed. When I was about 11 years old, I read a book called Follow My Leader by James Garfield. And it was about a little boy who gets blinded by a firecracker. And by the way, I never go near firecrackers because of that. And in the book, he eventually comes to terms with the fact that he's blind and he goes to a Braille school and he learns Braille. And they wrote out the Braille alphabet in the book. And I thought, well, that's like learning a secret code. I want to do that. So I went and I got a piece of cardboard and a punch out of my dad's toolbox, and I made myself a little Braille display, I guess you would call it, and I taught myself Braille as a little kid.
That is so impressive. Can you teach me? I'm 50 and blind, and I don't know it. That's incredible.
Well, y'all were talking about a little handheld device to do Braille with that sounded like maybe I could force myself to actually learn it, but I didn't do it. But then as I got into podcasting, a couple of blind people wrote to me, and that's when I realized, well, wait a minute, podcasting is to blind people as podcasting is to sighted people. It is the exact same thing. So yeah. Why not? I mean, that seems like a perfectly natural thing to be as inclusive as possible. And then I started getting interested in voiceover as I started to know people like Daryl Shandro and Slough. And I thought, maybe I should try to teach myself voiceover. And I got the crazy idea, what if I forced myself to do a tech talk at Macworld blindfolded? And by giving myself that deadline, and I took my collection of blind friends, and I had about a dozen by that time in my set, and I said, hey, I'm going to need your help. Because I need to learn this, and I need to learn it fast, and I need to learn it well, and I need to learn how to really focus down what I'm going to try to demo. And I remember Slough telling me, oh, yeah, it's easy. You're going to be able to do this. It's going to be great. And about, I don't know, a month and a half in, I called him up, and I said, this isn't easy. This is hard. And he just started laughing. And I said, why did you say that? And he says, because if I told you how hard it was, you never would have started.
Yeah, it's not easy. It does involve you wanting to throw your phone and everything you own out of a window.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the phone I find not trivially easy or anything, but I find I was able to conquer what I wanted to conquer with it. But, you know, trying to do stuff on the Mac was, wow. Mm. I did sadly crash and burn in my presentation. I ended up having to pull the blindfold partway through because I did the thing they tell you never to do. I changed one thing right before I went on stage, and it was to put my presentation on the desktop, and I got it stuck to my cursor. And it was like I was walking around with, like, I had my foot nailed to the ground. I was walking in circles, and I was flinging open folders, and my husband was there, and he was really worried I was going to open, like, a medical folder or financial or something. And, but the audience was very, very kind. They said, well, you taught us how hard it was. And I said, well, that's not what I was trying to teach, but okay.
Yeah, but you're very brave to even attempt it. The trouble I think you would have is that you have that option to jump out of it and back into your comfort zone, right? I mean, we haven't got that choice, so we got to stick with it.
So I'm really glad I did that talk because it gave me kind of the fundamentals, and I would put myself as maybe a low intermediate, high beginner at voiceover. But what it gave me was the skill to be able to test apps and websites and services for VoiceOver when I'm doing reviews. So, now, I don't always remember to do it. In fact, I got a message on Mastodon today because I talked about the Ember mugs, and they said, you forgot to test it for accessibility. It's like, oh, they're right. But I'm good enough at VoiceOver that I can tell you if it's not accessible. Like if I run into a brick wall where it says, yeah, that whole area is empty, well, I know that that's not accessible. So I can let you know. And I also, but I can't tell you if it's good accessible. You know, I can tell if all the buttons are unlabeled. Okay, this person didn't even try. Or sometimes what I find is maybe a bunch of buttons are labeled, but then there's a couple missing. I'll write to the developer and say, hey, you forgot these two. And 9 times out of 10, they come back and go, my app's accessible? Cool. How'd I do that? But it gives me the opportunity to encourage companies to do that. And then I usually send them a couple of my blind friends to help test. I've got one guy, Scott Howell is great about testing apps. And so I usually trick him into talking to people. And I just feel like I can help accelerate things and tell people, don't even bother to check this out. Or maybe you want to try it because I think it's accessible.
That's so important, though. We get so excited if accessibility is mentioned outside of our little bubble. If it's mentioned in the mainstream at all, we lose our minds because it is so important. And even if it's like as easy as at the end of a review or summing up a review, say, oh, by the way, I found that it was mostly accessible using VoiceOver or not. It's just so nice to have that thought about. It makes a huge difference.
I did my podcast is a little bit weird. I write blog posts and then my podcast is me reading those blog posts. And it's not as bad as it sounds because I write the way I read and I've been doing it for 19 years. So it's very fluid for me to read my own writing and it sounds almost natural. Maybe a little rehearsed because there's no ums and ahs because I'm reading. But one of the ones I did recently in written text and in the podcast was I explained how I test for accessibility. I wanted to give like some very rudimentary things people could try on their own to see if they could test for accessibility, just to try to increase the knowledge of people. That was one. The other thing I did recently that I'm really excited about, I do video tutorials for the Screencast Online paid for podcast service. It's an Apple-centric video tutorial service, and it's highly popular in the Apple community. And one of the ones I did was adding image descriptions in social media. And I walked through each of the different apps like Facebook and Instagram and Mastodon. And I even showed using Be My Eyes to write the captions for Mona. Or for captions for the photo, but then obviously going straight into Mona, it adopts those captions. And after I did it, I was feeling really good about it. And I realized this is really a public service announcement. So I talked to the people that run Screencast Online, Lee Garrett runs it. And I said, I think this is important enough, we should give it away. And he watched it and said, spot on, let's give it away for free. So I've got it out there that just trying to get people aware of, like, it used to be really hard, but now it's really pretty easy if you can figure out where they've hidden the button. And so by giving people like 7 or 8 different apps, I was able to maybe give them a way to learn what to look for if they get it into one they can't find.
And what's the feedback to your shows like? Because you're not aiming your show at a blind or low vision audience, right? You're aiming at a mainstream audience. So what's the reaction?
I think people have just begun to be educated about it and understand that it is something for the blind. But I'll often just refer to screen readers in general so that it's a little bit, or accessibility for the blind. I throw that in. I don't just say VoiceOver. And what I've started noticing is, like, I have a Slack community, and virtually every image anybody puts up in Slack has captions on it. And this is a fairly small community, but there's a couple of people who are blind, and why wouldn't we, just in case? And it's an open community. So I've started noticing that. And then I have a Bart Bouchatz I mentioned earlier. He and I do a show called Programming by Stealth. He's teaching the audience to program through an audio podcast. And when we were going through learning HTML, he went out of his way to study all of the area labeled by stuff or aria labeled by stuff. So when he taught us from the ground up that we would always make our stuff accessible, and that was just part of the fabric of it. And it wasn't a separate thing. It was just, that's how you program for the web. You program accessibly. And so I've just started noticing other people other than me pushing it and making it part of the fabric of what we talk about on the shows.
You're heading off to CSUN.
Yeah.
And what is it you're expecting to see? Because you've been there before, right? This is not your first rodeo. This is not your first time that blind people are scared because they're being collected at the door by Alison. So what do you find? And what have you been finding at CSUN in the past? What have you been surprised about?
Well, this is, I tried to ask Donald Burr the first time he tricked me into going to it when it was up at near the LA airport. And back then it was in an area that was way too small. So it was basically like watching bumper cars in a really, really loud arena because every single booth was blasting sound because people can't see. There were dogs, there were wheelchairs, there were canes, and everybody was running into each other. All you could hear was, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, bang, 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 bang.
Yes.
Now it's much, much nicer. It's out in Anaheim at one of the convention centers, and it's two big exhibit halls. There are classes, and one year we snuck into a couple of, not snuck, but we were allowed to go in. We went into a couple of classes, and it was really great, but I really only am able to make time to go for one day. So we go into the exhibit halls, and we walk around and interview people. And we don't just focus on things for blind accessibility. We look into all different things, and I've just been amazed at some of the things I never even thought about. Like there's a lot of tools for people with autism to be able to communicate. And there's physical accessibility things. It's just like a room full of toys. You know, it's really cool. One thing that is very interesting is how prevalent Android things are because Android lets you reskin. I remember last year there was a guy who had an app that you could hold up to a traffic light and it would tell you whether or not the light was red, green, or yellow. And it would also give you vibrating feedback on whether or not you were walking between the lines. So you hold it up against your chest and you could see whether you could cross. Or sense, I should say. And that was really, really cool. So I never know what I'm going to get. The weirdest one, the CIA had a booth and we walked up and we started talking to this woman and I said, would you be able to do an interview? And she lost her ever loving mind because she thought we were already recording her. And I could not calm her down. I was like, no, that's why I asked you. And I mean, we finally just had to back away because she wouldn't stop yelling at me. It was really weird. I said, why are you here?
I mean,
I get
that
they're the CIA, right? But
I remember this because I remember reading in the exhibitor list the CIA, and we're talking here Central Intelligence Agency, were at CSUN. And I remember thinking, okay, you know, there's that part of me that's thinking, right, they're trying to get blind people to be spies. This is a good idea. I think this makes sense because we can blend in. No one notices us. We can blend in. And
or ignores us.
Well,
that's
exactly.
Even better.
They just ignore us.
We're invisible.
We could sit in any conversation, just, you know, get out a piece of Braille paper, read it upside down. They don't care. And that'd be fine. But
cut eye holes in newspapers. Useless
well,
on every
fun.
Level.
Yeah, exactly. That. No need for them, really. You could just use a regular newspaper, in fairness. But, you know, this is... Did you get any sense of why they were there?
What recruiting.
But is that what it is? They are actually looking to recruit people? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not everybody who works at the CIA is a spy.
Well, you say that. You don't know that, though, do you?
Yeah.
I do not know that. You are correct, sir.
I am no conspiracy theorist, but...
that is the strangest thing ever.
It does fascinate me. That does fascinate me.
Has there ever been a product there you've seen at CSUN or an app or hardware, software, whatever it may be, and you thought, you know what? I could use that. I want that myself. Has that ever happened yet?
Not really. I did have some FOMO about a set of backpacks that attached to a wheelchair at a company we interviewed at, I think it was actually at CES, not at CSUN. We always go to the accessibility booths in CES too. I remember thinking those were really cool, but I didn't have a wheelchair to put them on. That's as close as I could get. We interviewed a guy last year who has a hiking cane. He lives in Sonoma, which is a beautiful hiking country in well, I'm going to say Utah, I think. And they the guy likes to hike, and so he's got a cane with a big ball on the end of it that rolls and allows him to, you know, catch himself in little crevices and stuff. And terrifying, but that looked pretty cool. But and I am unstable on my pins at my age, but it was still pretty cool.
Yeah, because a lot of this tech is kind of built for the intended user, right? It's not really something that's mainstream. That's the whole point of it. It must be fascinating, though, when you go along, because there must be points when you look at this tech and think, you know, my goodness, I wouldn't even have thought something like that would exist.
Yeah.
But when I learned it existed, I now totally understand why.
Definitely. I talked to a guy whose son had some kind of big problem with his throat, and it caused physical look problems, and he had trouble speaking, and so his dad wrote an app for a tablet that put pictures on screen that would allow, if the kid tapped on the right picture, it would speak in his father's voice. And he told the story of how the first time his son, at about 17, went into a fast food restaurant, and he walked up to the counter, and he plopped the tablet down, and he tapped out what he wanted to eat for lunch. And he said he's pretty weird looking because of the problems with his neck and throat. And this beautiful young woman behind the counter put her elbows on the table and her chin in her hands and said, "Wow, that's amazing." And it was like the best day of this kid's life. You know, such a great inspirational story. Again, I wouldn't have thought of that needing to exist until I talked to him. You know, one thing I didn't mention yet is my mother went blind. She had macular degeneration, and I have dry macular degeneration myself. May never turn into wet, you know, knock on all pieces of wood I can find. But, you know, sometimes I feel like I might be looking into my own future when I look at things. But I remember the reason I brought up my mom is I remember a great story about my dad. My dad loved my mother to the moon and back. There was nothing on earth he wouldn't do for her. And after she'd started to lose her vision, they had a company come in with, it was a company called VTEC that had one of the magnifiers. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the old strip chart recorders, but that's not the right word. I'm forgetting the right word. Anyway, it's a little table thing that you set maybe a magazine or a piece of paper on, and then you slide it around and it magnifies up on this big screen.
Yes,
and my mother was just blown away at how that would help her to be able to read. And the guy started packing the device up and he said, "Oh no, you're leaving that here." My dad said, "I'm not letting you leave without that because I want my wife to have this today. I don't care what you charge me for it. We're buying that." And that was an inspirational thing, love story, but also about the accessibility tools, and always interested in that. And my mother loved tech; she loved accessible tech. I had her on my show one time. She's passed now, but I had her on my show one time where she talked about a tape player she got from the Braille Institute that allowed her to listen to tapes. And so she was an inspiration as well. She was really bad at tech, though. But she loved it.
You know, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun with what you do, because, you know, I hear a lot of podcasters, they're obsessed these days with AI, and in the mainstream world, that's everyone's talking about AI and the value of AI, what it can do. But it sounds like you want to talk about that too, but you kind of want to just shine a light on all this other great stuff that's going on. It is a great conversational topic, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's endless. In terms of AI, one of the ways I was able to keep my almost 19 year running streak was because of AI. I occasionally lose my voice, and usually I can, you know, gravel voice my way through. But one year, Sunday, it's every Sunday night it comes out, I was unable to talk. I could not talk. But I found 11labs.io, and I trained it on my own voice, and I had it do the podcast. So it's creepy. But it's technically sort of me. But since I write everything out up front, that works great, right? The other thing I've used AI for is I use a service called Auphonic, which levels my audio because I have different speakers or I record at different times. And it also, it does a whole bunch of other really cool stuff. But they've recently, the developer George has added the automatic transcripts. And so some of the stuff I do as conversations, like specifically like Programming by Stealth is a conversation, or I might have a guest on the transcript has every single word. So even if you don't, I don't have a blog post, now I have a transcript of that. And so it, that makes it more accessible to people who can't, maybe can't listen and need to be able to read. So there's pretty much no angle I can't get to for with on accessibility.
So you're at CSUN today, and you're going to be there for the day, and you're going to be having lots of fun. So we're going to hear the results of that. What, over the next few weeks on your podcast?
Yeah, the way my husband does the videos and then produces an audio file from that. So the audio will be in my podcast, but we don't like to do, you know, interview. We like to just sprinkle it out. And it kind of makes my life easier for weeks after a show that I don't have to write as much content for the podcast. So that's another advantage to me. So depending on how many different recordings we get, it could be a couple months from now by the time the last one comes out. We've just finished, we're almost done with our CES coverage from early January, but that was a case where we had like 38 interviews, so that's why they've kind of ended up overlapping this time. So don't expect rapid massive content, but there will be content every week for quite a few weeks still after.
And
this,
you've very kindly offered some of that content to us as well, so we look forward to hearing some of your conversations.
Yeah, that was my bribe to get
on
the show.
Yeah, and that worked well.
Yes, listen, well done.
Anything that makes our life easier, we'll take. That's generally how it works. And, you know, you're closer to it than I am. I'm just going to say it. You're closer. So that's fair.
Yes.
Alison, it has been wonderful talking to you. Tell people how to find your podcast and content.
Well, the best way to go is to go to podfeet.com, also poorly named, podfeet.com. I don't know. And I worked hard on naming these things. At least it's only 7 characters, so it's got that going for it. But one of my taglines is everything good starts with podfeet.com. If you want to find my videos, podfeet.com/YouTube. You want to go to the live chat room, podfeet.com/live. I mean, all those kinds of things are available to you. So, and from there, you can find Programming by Stealth and Chit Chat Across the Pond and everything.
And might we get an invite on, you know, any of that at any point? Just, you know,
no.
Wondering.
No.
Okay,
no. Sean maybe, but
yes,
no,
thank you.
It would be fun. I could, and when I wrote to you, I said I think we should find some hijinks.
Yes, I agree. Well, I think we started the hijinks here. Let's continue.
Can I say one more nice thing about Stephen?
Please.
No, sorry, we're out of time.
I think one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you was when you were talking about Humanware and the. Humane pin,
yes,
and
yes.
The inaccessibility of that. And you talked a little bit about not ranting about the fact that it was inaccessible, not pounding your tiny little fist and being angry about it. And because, as you said, my father always said, you catch more flies with honey. And I really resonated to that is when I'm making my blind people collections, I tend to veer towards the ones who are like that. I have met people who are very angry all the time. And every problem is an 11 and I need to go yell at somebody about it. And I never send them to developers to help test apps because I know they're just going to be snotty. Like, this doesn't work. Instead of, hey, this could be improved by. So I resonated with that comment and the warmth of the attitude here on the show, plus the snarky sarcasm. Those are the two things that go really well together to me.
I mean, I'll take all of that. I think that is lovely what you've said. I'm going to, you know, pick you up a little bit on the tiny little fist. It's an average size.
No, it's not.
But other than that, I would say thank you so much for those kind words. I'm so glad you reached out, and I want you to have a great time at CSUN. Say hello to all your blind collection of people. It's like Sylvanian families, but, you know, blind people.
It's more like the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, if
that's
you ask
another
me.
Way to think about it, yes.
Alison the Blind Catcher.
Okay, we're going to get flack from somebody for this.
more than likely. Alison, thank you so much. Come back soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Alison.
And that's almost it for today. Just a reminder that we will be covering more of the big announcements from CSUN as we get them. Oh, it's been an interesting week so far, Sean. I have to be honest, I wasn't expecting hardware announcements this early.
Yeah, I know. Straight off the starting line, we got some really big announcements. So, yeah, I'm as I said, I'm always excited by CSUN. And one year, I will be there. Hello, Mr. F, I love you.
Mr. F.
Is that going to work yet, do you think?
No. No, of course it's not going to work. He's not going to spend money. You know, that comes out of the whiskey budget, and that is definitely that is sacrosanct. That is not going to be getting touched. Look, you got to Vienna. What more do you want?
I know. I'm very, very grateful, but I want to go to CSUN as well.
Yeah, the Vienna, the Anaheim of Europe. There you go. That's the closest you're going to get. Let's just put it that way. Listen, that is almost it for us today. Just a reminder, we are going to be talking to Ira in the coming days. So do get in touch with us. If you have a question that you would like to put to the team at Ira, then get in touch. feedback@doubletaponair.com. You can also drop us a voicemail. How do you drop someone a voicemail? You can leave a voicemail. There, sounds better. Thank you. 1-877-803-4567. Of course, all our content is online as well at doubletaponair.com. And we're on YouTube. More conversations there. Very exciting, Sean. Coming up, we'll be talking to the good people at Zoom about their new audio recorders. We're going to be talking to them as well. And you can also go and find out our chats about Siri recently. A great conversation about Apple Vision Pro with Rebecca Rosenberg, the founder of the app Roboca. Honestly, there's so much great stuff up there. I forget myself how wonderful we are, Sean Priest.
We are everywhere. Yes, wonderful or not, we are everywhere.
We're back tomorrow with more. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm Margaret Shepherd of the AMI podcast, Tripping On Air. Every month, my co-host Alex Hajar and I spill the tea on what it's really like to live with MS. Watch Tripping On Air on YouTube or download wherever you get your pods.